From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Bob Garfield is away, but WNYC's Marianne McCune joins me this hour as we report this week from Mexico. What's happening here now will have a resounding impact on both sides of our porous, problematic border.
Mexico is the U.S.'s third largest trading partner. One in 10 Americans is Mexican-American. And we're also tethered together by an inconclusive, bloody, seemingly endless drug war and the cynicism it breeds.
Today, Mexico City's highways are crammed with campaign banners, its airways with political chat, and its narrow streets with protesters, angry and eager. It's been dubbed the Mexican Spring. That analogy may be a little overwrought, but July 1st's presidential election marks a significant shift.
It's Mexico's third presidential election since the ruling PRI party was toppled after 7 decades in power. 12 years later, as Mexico battles rising crime and a bad economy, the PRI is poised to win again. Students, tens of thousands of them, are filling the streets in protest. Not just against the PRI's candidate, Enrique Peña Nieto. They're even angrier at Mexico's TV monopoly. It's skewed election coverage that seems to make his win inevitable. Some protesters wear mock TVs on their heads, a satirical comment on the power of the Mexican TV monolith, Televisa.
Many of these marchers were mobilized by a notorious political blunder by the PRI back in May, when Peña Nieto showed up at a prominent university full of what he assumed would be complacent middle-class kids, and then was shockingly shouted down.
It's supposed to be a very controlled environment. You know, rich people send their children there because there are no rabble-rousers there.
Alejandro Pisanti, head of the Computer Sciences Department at National Autonomous University, said the fire under the current national protest was lit by a PRI spokesman who blithely dismissed the angry students as outside agitators and paid opposition stooges.
The moment this guy says this, people who will be supportive of Peña Nieto resent that the Peña Nieto campaign resorts to these kind of arguments, which are, you know, what the country has fought against by removing the PRI from power for a few years.
Televisa and TV Azteca, the TV monopoly, or duopoly, as expected, minimized and belittled the protest. But the incident was streamed live online. Later, 131 of those demonstrators posted videos of themselves on YouTube holding up their student IDs. Thus was born the movement called Yo Soy 132. I am number 132. It all went viral.
Tamara A177.
Oscar Caballero 1733.
Estefania L 1693.
Alumno de la Universidad Iberoamericana.
Certainly in the PRI times, it would have been a non-event which was only known in the underground and always questioned. Was it real? Was it manipulated? Is the information real? 10 years ago, this would have gone down as an urban legend, and today it was a campaign turning point and a fact.
Hey, Brooke, I'm walking along here with all these young people, and I've met up with my friend Diego Bucio from when I lived here 9 years ago.
I'm here to prove that this movement is true. Most of the people in Mexico, it's informed through the television and radio, Televisa and TV Azteca. So they said that this movement wasn't real. They said that all these protests and all these demonstrations were paid. So that awakened this spirit of, hey, that's a lie. And there is no democracy.
I mean, we are talking about media.
Antonio Martinez Velazquez works for Article 19, an international free speech organization.
It's a really rare election because we are talking seriously about media, about how they cover the election, about the fact-checking, about the journalism, about the deals between media and politics, about transparency, about accountability. I mean, we are talking about these issues in the street.
And not just in the street.
I'm Benito Nasif. I am a member of the General Council of Mexico's Federal Elections Commission.
In a government office, he seems just as appalled as the protesters by the collusion between politics and media. He's charged with implementing a recent law that bans candidates from directly buying ads during the 90-day campaign. The commission pays for them, allots them to each party according to a formula, and strictly controls the airtime. Sounds kind of refreshing?
Yeah, well, one of the things that worries me is that the ban created an incentive for a black market of editorial time.
Buying commentators.
Absolutely. Buying interviews, buying mentions of candidates, buying favorable reports and favorable news as well.
So you think there's a possibility that it might have actually made things worse?
In some respects, yes.
Nassif says the new law has unleashed a tide of unintended consequences. Now the FEC monitors the ads for slander and libel. Imagine that. That takes time, reducing a campaign's ability to respond and maneuver. For instance, back in 2006, when the front runner declined to take part in the first debate, that night his opponent aired an ad showing an empty chair. Now the system is too slow to accommodate such sudden bursts of inspiration. But TV news shows can.
What effect is this having? Making the commentators on TV and the editorial time more important. You cannot circumvent them. You are making these TV channels even more powerful than in the past. It's completely the opposite of what they wanted.
There's a group in the Mexican Congress composed of legislators who aren't merely in the pocket of broadcasters, they are broadcasters, and they are poised to win more seats. Broadcast legislators recently sought to kill network neutrality and allow internet service providers to block or filter as long as they were open about it. Alejandro Pisanti of Mexico's National Autonomous University fought it.
A company should not abuse their ability to manage the network in order to favor someone commercially or politically. We describe it here in Mexico as the five alls. You should have access to all ports, all protocols, all content, all origins, and all destinations.
And so what happened to the network neutrality vanquishing bill that these congresspeople presented?
It was defeated in 4 days by a Twitter-based movement and the session in the Senate.
But next time, they could win.
Broadcast industry candidates are being fronted not just by the PRI, but by the PAN, the party that now holds the presidency but is running third. And even the PRD, the party of student favorite Andrés Manuel López Obrador. Many of today's demonstrators have moved from the streets to Mexico City's main square to watch one of only two televised presidential debates on a big screen. They sound like soccer fans. They boo Peña Nieto. Initially, it seemed that Mexico's two main broadcasters were not going to air this debate. A clamor organized online forced a reversal, another win. But here, as everywhere, the internet offers no guarantees. Only about 30 to 40% of Mexicans are online, and a much smaller portion engages in social media. Most rely on Televisa and TV Azteca, which, as we heard, do a bang-up business quietly selling positive coverage to candidates with deep pockets.
So what's at stake here? Corrupted media thrives on and perpetuates a corrupt political establishment, breeding a kind of frustrated resignation. But during that lively march through Mexico City, we saw frustration transmuted into street theater and humor.
The fact that you can make jokes about extremely tragic subjects is something that people are experts at here in Mexico.
Greg Berger covers the twin travails of Mexican democracy and the drug war for the website Narco News.
People here know me as Gringoyo. I moved to Mexico in 1998. And for the better part of that time, I've been making political satire alongside Mexican social movements. Pieces based around archetypes of characters from the United States, like the revolutionary terrorist, the greedy businessman, the misinformed reporter. This is a DVD called Narcomania and other satires that use those characters. Everything I learned about political humor, I learned from my friends here in Mexico. And one day we were sitting around having some beers, and saying, you know, all these crazy, absurd myths about the war on drugs, you know, this cartel was broken up, that cartel was broken up. The next thing we know, they're going to say that they brought down Yoko Ono to get married to Chapo Guzman to break up the Sinaloa cartel. Then there was a pause for about 30 seconds, and we said, yeah, it's our next video. So we made a video with a Beatles theme, and it opens it up with a shot-by-shot recreation of A Hard Day's Night. With widows of drug war violence chasing four agents from the U.S. Embassy around Mexico City. And then it's just one Beatles joke after another. And the thing is that the Beatles are actually more popular here with young people than in the United States. I actually ran into a teenager at an event in Cuernavaca. We started talking about the video, and he said, oh, you made that? And I said, yeah. Oh, I'm a big Beatles fan, and I didn't know about this movement against the war on drugs until my friend showed me this video on the internet, because I watch everything that has to do with the Beatles. That's exactly why we make these videos. When you make jokes about the most tragic of subjects, you can actually engage in some very profound communication.
Mexicans smile, not happily, when asked about the justice system. More than 90% of murders go unsolved. For murdered journalists, it's closer to 100%. In states controlled by the cartels, reporters are increasingly picked off and returned in plastic bags. Murder is a state crime, but in some places there is no state. Reporters dare not report. Last November, On the Media reported on a constitutional reform in Mexico that would make the murder of journalists a federal crime. Somehow, we thought it would have become a law by now. It hasn't.
Coming up, covering or not covering the cartels.
I'm off to Juarez now. Is there anything I shouldn't ask the mayor there?
When you see the mayor, make it the last day and make sure your cab to the airport is outside and still running.
It's scheduled for the first day?
Leave on the first day.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.